Would you like for us to post information about your congregation on the Find a Church page of our website? We'll add your church when it becomes part of the Issues Etc. 300. We're looking for 300 congregations to donate $1,000 to Issues Etc. Please consider adding the worldwide outreach of Issues Etc. to your church's mission or advertising budget. Find out more about the Issues Etc. 300 at issuesetc.org. Click support and publicize your congregation to the world.
We make a grave mistake if we believe that tonight these results are somehow an embrace of the Republican Party. What they are is a second chance. A second chance for Republicans to be what they said they were going to be not so long ago.
You see, I've been in some pretty tough fights in my day. They've been in the street, been in a boxing ring, and they've been in the United States Senate. But I have to admit, this has been one of the toughest.
There's also a lot of questioning on my part in terms of could I have done something differently or done something more so that those folks would still be here.
Well, there's some election analysis from Senate-elect Marco Rubio of Florida, Senator Harry Reid of Nevada, of course, and none other than President Barack Obama. Greetings and welcome to Issues Etc. live this Wednesday afternoon, the 3rd of November. I'm Todd Wilkin. Thanks for tuning us in. Everybody has an opinion on why it happened and what happened. The question is, what does it mean for the future of the United States? Not unusual that in a midterm election, you're going to find the reversal of fortune, perhaps the change of fortune. There are some things in there that have never been there before in midterm elections, like the Tea Party. Maybe that had something to do with it. We're going to begin with some election analysis from Mark Hemingway of the Washington Examiner, and then a little bit later, we'll talk to Chris Roseborough of Fighting for the Faith about eternal punishment. Our call-in number, live this Wednesday afternoon, November the 3rd, 1-877-623-6943, 877-623-MYIE. Email us here in the studio, talkback at issuesetc.org. Send us a tweet at issuesetc. Or post a question or comment in advance for Chris Roseborough at our Facebook fan page, facebook.com/issuesetc. Mark Hemingway is a regular guest. He's editorial page staff writer for the Washington Examiner. Mark, welcome back.
Hey, thanks for having me again.
President Obama had a press conference today. What did you think of his reaction, his analysis to yesterday's elections?
Well, I think he's understandably probably still coming to terms with this himself. I do think that, you know, it was, you know, sufficiently humble. He did note that, you know, he was pretty out front about the fact that I think the word he used was shellacked. He seemed to be, you know, coming to terms with a pretty massive defeat for Democrats. So that was good. Now, that said, he had his one note thing during the press conference where he just kept insisting it was a comment on the economy and not necessarily his own agenda. I do think that that's a bit misplaced and, you know, seems to be spin on his part.
Okay, at the House where fiscal matters originate for the federal government, and in the Senate, there were significant shifts. The Senate, at least, a slimmer majority for the president's party. Do you think that President Obama can work with the other party, the Republicans, on some things?
Well, you know, I certainly hope so. Although, again, remember when we, like in 1994, when Bill Clinton got a thumping in his first midterm and he pivoted to the right. There was a lot more evidence at the time that Bill Clinton was more of sort of a pragmatic Southern governor as opposed to Obama, who appears to be more of a, you know, out-and-out liberal ideologue. So, you know, maybe it's possible, you know, being put in these kind of historic situations tends to do weird things to people in power. So maybe Obama will find it within him to grow and compromise and work with Republicans. But you have to remember, it's not that long ago that Obama was, you know, telling the Republicans they needed to compromise for him because, quote, I won. You know, he has not evinced a great deal of humility so far in his presidency, and I hope he can find a way to compromise, but I'm not optimistic.
What surprised you most, Mark, when you were watching stuff last night?
Well, I think one thing that a lot of people aren't talking about that needs to be talked about is down ballot. You know, everybody is talking about the great gains in the House and in the Senate. Those are certainly historic. I mean, you know, biggest Republican majority since the 20s, you know, most seats changing hands in any given election since 1946. But at the same time, we also have a situation where Republicans now control 55 out of 98 state legislative chambers. That is the most they have controlled since 1946. I mean, that is a really, really big deal. That's going to set the tone for a lot of things. And Republicans are likely going to have a hand in drawing lines for 314 congressional districts. So it's a really, really big deal. These down-ballot races are going to have a big impact nationally. And not just that, for the future of the Republican Party, you know, you're going to have a huge bench of potential candidates in the future running for Republican offices that are now engaged in the political process that weren't a very short time ago.
Your thoughts on the Senate races?
I was a bit surprised. I do think Republicans slightly underperformed. I would have thought that Sharon Angle could have pulled off that victory in Nevada, although I was surprised by the margin of victory for Harry Reid in that race. And I do also think that it's really kind of a shame that Joe Miller didn't pull off run a better campaign up in Alaska. And I also thought those were sort of two key races because those are both states where you have really unique situations in state politics where you have these entrenched political machines in Nevada. It's the gaming and casino lobby really dominates a lot of the state politics, and it doesn't have a lot of positive impacts in that regard. And the same thing is true up in Alaska, where you have Lisa Murkowski, the incumbent senator there, that looks like she's going to win on a write-in, you know, inherited that seat from her father. And her father, Frank Murkowski, and Ted Stevens, you know, have been part of sort of a, well, I mean, it's frankly just a corrupt Republican machine up there that has been, you know, bilking taxpayers, you know, through, you know, federal pork. Getting federal pork up to Alaska for a long, long time, and it would have been really nice in both of those cases to see, you know, some two political outsiders in the form of Joe Miller and Sharon Angle that really didn't owe anyone, according to, you know, inside the political machine, and get in there and, you know, mix it up a bit.
Did the Tea Party fail to deliver in these Senate races in the case of Angle, O'Donnell, and Miller?
I think that that's absolutely true to a certain extent, but look, you know, the bottom line is the Republicans owe a great deal of their success last night to the Tea Party. So, you know, what happens when you have a new big popular movement like that, this, that's sweeping a whole bunch of new people that haven't been previously engaged into the political process, is what that means is you're going to get some sort of novices and some not so desirable candidates, you know, into positions in surprising ways. I mean, Angle's victory in the Nevada primary was just, you know, flat out shocking. I mean, no one saw that coming. She didn't really have that big an organization, if at all. So, you know, the fact that she was even in the game was remarkable to think about. You know, obviously, Christine O'Donnell was a less than desirable candidate for about a million different reasons. Whereas Joe Miller simply just ran a bad campaign. You know, here was a guy that was a judge in Alaska, a Yale law degree, had a Yale law degree and was a combat veteran. That was his race to lose, and I think he just lost it. So, you know, that isn't necessarily on the Tea Party. But, you know, you take the bad with the good. You know, now that you've got a whole bunch of different people engaged in the process, maybe by the next election cycle, the cream will start to rise a little bit more, and we'll get, you know, some of the neophytes that aren't very good will wash out. And not be put into these positions so quickly.
Has Sarah Palin's clout gone? Is it down in any way since Miller's loss?
I don't think so. You have to remember that Sarah Palin was elected in Alaska, sort of, you know, in opposition to this, you know, corrupt Republican machine. It's literally known on Capitol Hill as the Alaska Mafia, because you have dozens of lobbyists running around in K Street that are former Murkowski or Ted Stevens aides that have, you know, bilking Congress for everything it's worth. So I think people actually think fondly of her for standing up to that machine, and to some extent backing Miller was another example of her standing up to this corrupt Republican machine in Alaska. And people, I think, will recognize that Joe Miller was, you know, didn't run a very good campaign. You know, and although I don't think anyone necessarily has any negative feelings toward the guy, unless you're a hardcore Democrat or Murkowski supporter, he just ran a bad campaign. So, you know, again, I think that's one way of viewing it. There's just, you know, her support of Miller was a way of standing up, you know, as a reform Republican in a state that has a pretty powerful Republican machine, and people will, you know, take it or leave it in that regard. But, you know, she'd already lost a lot of crowd among Alaskans for resigning early as governor. So, you know, people already have pretty defined opinions about her.
How do you account for the marginal gains that the Republicans experienced last night as opposed to the huge gains they experienced in the House last night?
Oh, you mean in the Senate versus the... Yeah. Well, again... You have to remember that, you know, we can in aggregate predict a lot of, you know, broad trends. And I think actually pollsters are getting pretty good at, you know, predicting the broad trends. But at the end of the day, it boils down to, you know, the dynamics in, you know, 435 individual congressional races and you know, the handful of Senate races that are on top of that, the 30 or so or whatever that are up that year. So, you know, you can't really get down to the micro level and predict each individual race. And then you also have a situation, too, where you know, with multiple House seats in a given state, you have, you know, it's more susceptible to, you know, the overall statewide trends, whereas people are focused on, you know, an individual sort of at the top when you're running for Senate. So I think it's easier to for trends, for people to be caught up in statewide trends when they're in the House versus the Senate, which seems like a decision unto itself.
When we come back, a few more minutes with Mark Hemingway, editorial page staff writer for the Washington Examiner. We have a link to his articles at our website, issuesetc.org. More post-election analysis on this Wednesday afternoon, November the 3rd, with Mark Hemingway. Then we'll be joined by Chris Roseborough. We'll be talking about eternal punishment. A big question there: why do both old-style mainline liberals and the new-style emergent church types both reject hell? We'll be right back.
Have you ever wanted to know about the origins of Issues Etc.? Did you know church leaders were opposed to teaching the laity Reformation theology? Check out our new YouTube video, You Can't Teach Lay People Theology, issuesetc.org, and click support, equipping the priesthood of all believers. Watch the short YouTube video, You Can't Teach Lay People Theology, today. Just go to the support page of our website, issuesetc.org.
We know that you want to build your family on the right foundation from the very start, the foundation of Jesus Christ. Concordia Publishing House offers more than 8,000 products for churches, schools, and homes, dedicated customer service, and an experienced staff to help you focus on what matters most. Click to connect at cph.org. Concordia Publishing House, listening, responding, providing for God's people. Concordia Publishing House, cph.org.
Talk radio for the thinking Christian. You're listening to Issues Etc.
We've got nothing against bumper stickers, just bumper sticker theology. And we'd like to send you an Issues Etc. bumper sticker. You'll find the Issues Etc. logo, slogan, and website address. Simply send your request to Lutheran Public Radio, Box 912, Collinsville, Illinois, 62234. Please include a self-addressed stamped envelope. Good theology doesn't fit on a bumper sticker, but you can tell people where to find good theology, the Issues Etc. bumper or window sticker.
Hi, this is Kate in Japan, and I'm commenting on the program you had about the Unification Church.
Thanks to God's gift of the Internet, people are listening to Issues Etc. around the world.
The most important point is to say I love your show and thank you for doing what you do. Bye from Japan.
Old theology, new technology, Issues Etc. worldwide. Listen to what you want, when you want, wherever you are. Issues Etc. issuesetc.org.
Welcome back to Issues Etc. Mark Hemingway of the Washington Examiner is our guest for a few more minutes, and we'll talk eternal punishment with Chris Roseborough. of Fighting for the Faith. It's Wednesday afternoon, November the 3rd, 1-877-623-MY-IE. Talk back at issuesetc.org or visit our Facebook fan page, facebook.com/issuesetc. In the House, Mark, did any far-left liberals lose their seats, or were most of the Democratic losses blue dogs?
Well, most of the Democratic losses, you know, were blue dogs or conservative Democrats, but, I mean, that's just because they're victims of geography. I mean, they tend to be conservative Democrats because they represent districts that are more conservative. So, you know, when the electorate itself, you know, moves to the right, then, you know, they are stuck in this position where more people are opposed to Democrats. You know, there was one really prominent example where of sort of a far-left liberal loss, and that was Alan Grayson down in Florida, who was notorious for his incendiary rhetoric. He, in fact, he was the guy that ran that infamous Taliban Dan ad aimed at his opponent, accusing his opponent of being like the Taliban or whatever, because he was quoting scripture about wives submitting to their husbands. So, you know, but that was also, again, a situation where Grayson was sort of a fluke, and then he got elected as a very, you know, far-left congressman to a district that actually wasn't that far-left to begin with. You know, a lot of these districts that are represented by really far-left people are, you know, gerrymandered or heavily Democratic districts, and are always going to stay that way. I mean, Charlie Rangel got reelected last night, for crying out loud. So, you know, it is what it is.
What statewide races or results stood out to you, Mark?
Do you mean like governors or
yeah.
Like, okay. In Oregon, I think they're actually still counting the votes there, but it looks like, you know, Oregon, which is a state that has become pretty deep blue here in the past decade or two, looks like there's a good shot, but they're still counting the votes, that Chris Dudley, former center for the Portland Trailblazers and an Ivy League educated guy, but has never run for office before, might very well be the next governor of Oregon. That's been sort of a really interesting and, you know, telling race to watch in terms of how it's reflective of the mood of the country. So that's interesting. But other than that, there's a lot of individual races you could talk about. But again, I would just sort of defer to sort of the macro picture to, like, give you an idea of, like, how big an election this is for Republicans. Like, for instance, Republicans won 16 out of 30 races for state attorney generals, and that, you know, taking five of those seats away from Democrats, and further, they won they won 17 of 26 races for Secretary of States, and taking five from Democrats as well. So six from Democrats, excuse me. So, you know, it was a very, very big night for Republicans, you know, all the way down, you know, from dog, all the way down to dog catcher, you know, from Senate.
Was it bigger, except for the Senate, than the Senate at the federal level? Was it bigger than 94?
Oh, yeah, it was much bigger than 94. This, again, was the most seats that have changed hands for any party in an election since 1946.
All right, finally then, if you were asked to give some political advice to President Obama this afternoon, what would you suggest he do next after last night?
That is the $64,000 question. Obviously, I would suggest that he find some common ground on some big fiscal issues with Republicans and, you know, start working on those things. He mentioned earmarks during his press conference today. This is something the Republican Congress has been pushing a lot. Eric Cantor has written some stuff in support of this. You know, earmarking is this sort of a practice where basically, you know, individual congressmen are allowed to attach, you know, very highly targeted, you know, bits of spending to bills. And they sometimes attach dozens of these things to bills, giving, you know, millions of dollars at a time to, like, in pork, basically, to different interests in the district. And Republicans have for a long time wanted to cut back on this, although they haven't been very serious about their own rhetoric. They appear to have gotten serious about it in the minority, and Obama is now signaling that he thinks that this is an issue that would be, you know, a good area of compromise, and I agree that it's good politics. Now, the amount of money we spend on earmarks is nowhere near addressing the fiscal crisis that's facing our country, but, you know, it's good politics, and Obama needs to start finding, you know, issues like this that speak to fiscal sanity. identity and, you know, a handful of limited government things that Democrats would, you know, go along with, and, you know, send a clear message that he's going middle of the road after going really big and liberal with, you know, health care and some of these other things.
One of the questions I have is about Boehner. Will he be the leader in the House? Will Nancy Pelosi be the House minority leader?
Boehner is almost certain to be Speaker. I would be surprised if Nancy Pelosi were to stay on as Speaker of the House, just because, you know, she didn't really deliver, and I think the natives are getting restless. In fact, there were several people that campaigned as Democrats this election cycle saying they would not vote for Pelosi because she had become such a divisive figure. What that means is that it will likely fall to the majority leader, Steny Hoyer, to assume the role of Speaker. He's, you know, a competent but not particularly dynamic leader, and we'll see how it shakes out. You know, Steny might get challenged from the left, the liberal base is angry right now, so we'll see.
Mark Hemingway is editorial page staff writer for the Washington Examiner. We have a link to his columns at our website, issuesetc.org. Click Listen on Demand. Mark, thank you very much.
Thank you.